This is the Anderson Files on PodClip. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President, Retirement Services, and partner of Finestone Partners. Finestone Partners is an independent firm with securities offered through Four Point Capital. And now your host, Mike Anderson.
Why do entrepreneurs fail to win? With me today is Gary Polk. As a Black businessman, CEO, business consultant, university professor, and author, Gary Polk is passionate about entrepreneurs and why they succeed or fail. His initial book, Why Entrepreneurs Fail to Win, is widely used as a textbook in college entrepreneurship programs. Why Black and Brown Entrepreneurs Fail to Win, another publication coming out on December 1st, 2020, is intended for entrepreneurs and those who want to be one. He is also an advocate of social entrepreneurship and launched the Polk Institute of Social Entrepreneurship on January 15th. Gary, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Mike. I'm happy to be here. I did want to just quickly clarify one thing, though. You have my first book title correct. Why Black and Brown Entrepreneurs actually was published December 2020. So that is already out there. What is coming up in between October and December 2021 is Why Women Entrepreneurs Fail, and that'll be the third book of the trilogy.
So that's coming up.
That's coming up. We're working on it now, so Why Women Entrepreneurs Fail will be ready at the end of the year. That'll be book three.
Fantastic. And to get started, why do entrepreneurs fail to win?
That's a great question. And in my years, I was a banker for 10 years. I've been teaching in education for 30 years now. And my perspective, they don't get the right help. And I emphasize right help. Some people get help, but they get the wrong help. So I read one book that said the number reason why businesses fail is because of timing. That may be right, but I'm not sure if it's number one. It may be number two or maybe 1A. I think getting help is really the ultimate.
And from your first two books, obviously this is the key to each of the first two books. How can entrepreneurs come over this wall, this impediment to being successful?
Well, I think it's an amazing time to be an entrepreneur. I think we have more resources, financial, technology. There's so many things, and I think in particular, the young people today, the millennials and now even the Gen Zs, think very entrepreneurial. My generation, I was a baby boomer, and most of my peers thought, get a good job, one job for life, 40 years, retire, get a watch, and you're done. But I think the idea of capitalism is really about making a profit and not a paycheck. And Adam Smith, way back in 1776, wrote a book called The Wealth of Nations that outlined capitalism. In the United States, we've done the best of any country when we talk about capitalism. And so it's a great time because our economy is really fueled by small business. Small business creates jobs more than any Fortune 500 grouping. And it also is the innovators, and that might be the most important part. Corporations, once they get to a certain size, they're too big. They're like the ocean liner when it comes to trying to innovate and make turns, whereas the entrepreneur is that speedboat that can turn a lot easier. But with all that said, a lot of people, a guy named Michael Gerber wrote a book called The E-Myth Revisited, and he said the fatal assumption was that because I know the technical parts of my job, therefore, I can run a business. and that is a flaw. It takes much more to run a business than just the technical part of the job. So his entrepreneur myth said, in reality, technicians, they say they start a business, but actually they're creating a job. Whereas the entrepreneur will rely on people and systems that works without them, and now that is scalable. And so there you have the problem of the mentality going in. And so when I work with people, I ask, are you creating a job or are you creating a business? Do you want to be a technician or do you want to be an entrepreneur? And a lot of people never thought of it in that context. But Gerber talks about the technician does it all themselves. They never go get help. They're doing it. And now what became the starting of the dream becomes a nightmare, and you're working 15 hours a day, 18 hours a day, and then you burn up and you quit. Burn out and then you quit. And so I think it's the mindset.
Gary, with the age that we live in and the opportunity for entrepreneurs, is California the place to start a business, or other states, other parts of the country? How does California look right now as far as those plus signs for entrepreneurs?
Well, I can tell you that California is an amazing state. You probably know we have about 40 million residents, and you go back east and that might be five or six states, and they still don't have 40 million. And I think our economy is probably, I've heard anywhere from 5 to 7 in the world, California economy. So yes, it's expensive. Yes, San Francisco is very expensive. LA is expensive. But because California has the diversity that we have, I think it makes us amazing. I mean, at the end of the day, including our weather, we have Hollywood. We're one of the biggest agriculture states in the nation. People don't know it. They talk about Wisconsin as a cheese state. We have more dairy production in California than they do. We have a wine. We have the defense industry. And then we have the Silicon Valley, and that's tech world. And now we've tried to create the Silicon Beach down here in the Los Angeles area. So when you think about diversity, I think California is the best. I love the people. I love the lifestyle. You want to be a farm boy, you can go to Central California and have your agriculture. You want to get into water, we have the ocean. You want to get into space and science, we have locally, and then we have Northern California. So we have it all. We really do. A lot of people are moving out, but people are moving in at the same time. I have a couple of friends said, well, you know, everyone's going to Texas because they have no state tax. Okay. My family's from Texas. I've been through some Texas summers growing up. You can keep Texas. And, you know, I'm sure other people are proud of their particular state, but I think on a business standpoint, because of our diversity, California is the place to be, without a doubt. We, just like the United States, attract talent, smart people from all over the world. I believe California attracts smart people from all over the nation because of the diversity that we offer.
I'm chatting with Gary Polk on how entrepreneurs fail to win, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Gary, how are black and brown entrepreneurs different?
That's a great question. We did research, and just give you a little fallback. When I wrote my first book, Why Entrepreneurs Fail to Win, and that was published in 2019. I wrote that after teaching for 28 years, and I just put everything into it. All my best practices from an entrepreneur, small business, all I could. And I had fun in the process. I don't have a PhD. I have a master's. So I'm practitioner qualified to teach at the college level. That means that I work with CEOs. And I'm not doing a lot of research and saying conceptually, blah, blah, and theoretically, blah, blah. I'm talking real world. And what I found is that it's tough being an entrepreneur. It's a failure sport. So I had so much fun with the first book, sitting around talking to some friends. We said, hey, what if we focus on black and brown? So we did two things with the second book, Why Black and Brown Entrepreneurs Fail. We looked at cultural differences, and something that kept coming up during our research with young black and brown people, with middle age, with baby boomers, is something called self-doubt. So once we get past cultural differences and self-doubt, then black and brown entrepreneurs are just like all other entrepreneurs, fighting to try to build a founding team, trying to get the money that they need, the resources, to build the business and vision that they have. But self-doubt is big in the black and brown community, and culture differences. We're in America, so we might as well face it. There is a difference in the life trajectory and the background and all of that stuff when it comes to culture.
And Gary, for women in the business place and as entrepreneurs, do they approach this area of business a little differently? Are there differences there as well?
Well, absolutely. And so when I would go to pitch events, I took over the South Bay Entrepreneurial Center in 2014, where I really jumped into the entrepreneur ecosystem in Los Angeles with 2 feet. And I would say that if you go to pitch events, whether it's done by an angel group or venture capital or wherever, you have these private groups, they're male-dominated. And we know that people give money to people that look like them. And so one of the big challenges that women have, and this will be our first chapter for why women entrepreneurs fail, is access to capital, or lack thereof. But the other thing is the research. I have a female author who is a professor, colleague of mine at Dominguez Hills, Jennifer Broadman. She's done extensive research on access to capital. But you don't have as many female angel investors than men. You don't have as many venture capitalists than men. And therein lies the problem. We could throw in the black and brown. You don't have that many black and brown venture capitalists and angels. And there's a challenge. As far as the women, access to capital we felt was number one. So we started off the book with that. And then one thing that was interesting, I'll never forget, I was at a pitch event, and they had venture capitalists as a panel. They had 5 venture capitalists as a panel, one of which was a female from Texas. And the lady said in the audience, hey, I have a question for that female venture capitalist. What can you tell us women what we need to do when we're pitching? And the lady immediately said, I am so glad you asked, honey. You know, this Texas drawl thing. I am so glad you asked, honey. Sometimes we can be too pragmatic. It seems like the guys know the game, and they'll go up and they say that in 5 years, they're going to do $40 million in sales, $25 million in sales. And here comes a little lady, and she said, we're going to do $3 million in sales. We're going to do $5 million because I'm just trying to keep it real. But us venture capitalists, us investors know that we're probably going to cut whatever number down you say. So if you become too pragmatic and you try to be too realistic, and you come in with $3 million, $5 million, most people are not going to be excited about that. There's no sex appeal to $2 million in sales in 5 years. But to say you're going to build a $20 million, $40 million company. So being pragmatic is another issue that women entrepreneurs have versus others. And then we get into the work-life balance. As much progress as we've made with women doing other things, we found in COVID-19, when it comes to child rearing, it still falls on the woman. There's still a lot of women, single moms out there, trying to be an entrepreneur and a mom too. So those are 3 specific things that we talk about. But again, once we get past that, guess what happens? You still have to be an entrepreneur. So you still have to come up with a problem and a solution, and then be able to say why you're unique. and then you still have to build a team, and then you still have to go out and get capital and other resources. So my books, all three, are meant to be empowerment, and at the end of every chapter, we give you recommendations to win. So we know it's a failure game, and that's why we put in why X failed to win, be an entrepreneur, black and brown or women. But the to win is our empowerment piece, where we want to say, hey, you can do it. Not everybody's going to do it. We know that. But one of my values in entrepreneur space is failure. If you know anything about baseball, baseball is a failure sport. And so we know failure is going to be part of everybody's challenge, be it woman, be it black and brown, or be it any entrepreneur.
I'm talking with Gary Polk, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Gary, in January, the Polk Institute of Social Entrepreneurship was launched. Why was the organization created?
It's interesting. Being an educator, with COVID-19, I looked at an article in U.S. World News Report that talked about $1.6 trillion student debt, and that the average debt is about $33,000, but many people have debts over $100,000. So, for example, let's say it costs $80,000 plus to go to USC. 4 years, $320,000. How many of those kids are really coming out with jobs? But they're definitely going to have the debt. And then I did some more research and found out 15 universities in the United States are tuition-free, of which includes our military academies, West Point, Naval Academy, Air Force Academy, Coast Guard Academy, and Merchant Marine Academy. And they're all tuition-free. So then I asked the question, why couldn't we have a master-level entrepreneur program that's tuition-free to target black and brown, to give them an opportunity to get part of this capitalistic system, but not just to be a solopreneur or a micropreneur, but to build a business that's going to have excess of $1 to $5 million in sales. And so our focus became a tuition-free education where we decided we were going to put together 10 classes, 8 required plus 2 electives, 1 class a month, for 4 weeks. So it's a 40-week program, tuition-free. And then those companies that did well, we moved them to phase two, which is our Polk Accelerator Launchpad, where we paired them with a mentor that will then help them launch their business over the next 2 to 6 months. And then the third phase will be our access to capital, where we now introduce them to angels, investors, VCs, and even CDFIs, something called a community development financial institution that literally will loan to a startup. A lot of people don't realize that startups can get lending as well as investor money. So what we want to do is use capitalism and entrepreneurship, especially social entrepreneurship, to narrow that wealth gap, narrow that business gap, because we know what business ownership can do. Stanford University in 2018 did a research on Hispanic-owned businesses and found out that 98% of Hispanic-owned businesses had sales less than $1 million. We want to work with those companies and maybe change and give them the right help to increase sales above $1 million. I would suspect that if they interviewed black and researched black companies, 98% of those companies would have sales less than $1 million. So how can we help existing black and brown businesses go over $1 million as well as help startups? And there you have the Polk Institute and what we're trying to do. So our vision over the next 10 years, we want to launch 1,000 social entrepreneurships, ships being that metaphor for businesses, by 2032.
Social entrepreneurship, what is it? I'm talking with Gary Polk, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Gary, on that subject, could you go into a bit more about what social entrepreneurship is and how it's impacting business?
Well, I would love to. So there's a guy named John Elkington, and in 1994, he came up with this idea, the triple bottom line. And the triple bottom line is people, planet, profit. So my generation, baby boomers, I was taught the business of business is profit. It's all about profit. Forget the planet, let's make a profit. Forget the people, let's make a profit. And at some point, they were saying, oh, it's too expensive to be environmentally conscious and make a profit. So now where we are today is that people, planet, profit, the triple bottom line, is not a zero-sum game. All three can exist. And it was interesting, and I launched a business incubator at Cal State Dominguez Hills, where I teach, down in Carson, and I went to my executive board and said, after 3 months of being in business, and our original model was we empower entrepreneurs, I said, we're going to do a pivot. In 1 week, I went to 3 social entrepreneur-related events, and I had this epiphany that says, we're going to empower social entrepreneurs. And one of my members said, oh, Gary, everybody can't be a nonprofit. I said, oh, good point. But social entrepreneurship is about people, planet, and profit. A lot of people don't realize that. There's an organization called the B Corp. The B Corp is a nationwide organization that certifies for-profit companies as social entrepreneurs. And they have an exhaustive list of check-off items that you have to go through. So there are about 3,800 certified B Corp in the United States today. Patagonia, Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream are some of the bigger known companies, but we have a lot of others. Arbonne is a B Corp. Beneficial State Bank is a B Corp. And what's interesting, the B Corp or the social entrepreneur mentality is actually bigger in South America, in Europe, than it is in the United States. The good thing is that our millennials and our Gen Z, they're very altruistic, and so they eat up the idea of Tom's shoes, sell a pair, give away a pair of shoes. And so maybe baby boomers may be resistant to the idea, but the young generation, they're all over it. There's a couple other social entrepreneur organizations out there that promote, but B Corp is the one that I'm affiliated with, and we're trying to push their agenda, and they have chapters. Actually, surprisingly, the Portland chapter, the B Corp, is bigger than the L.A. chapter. Well, give us a little time, and we're going to push L.A. past that Portland chapter because we have many more businesses down here that we can have converted into B Corps. So startups can become a B Corp, and existing businesses can become a B Corp. Nonprofits, because of their nature, are automatically a B Corp, so they never get certified as a B Corp. So that is, if you go to, I think it's bcorp.net or bcorporation.net, you'll find their nationwide website and some of the amazing things they're doing. But it's a trend, and the reason why we did it at Dominguez Hills, it gave us a competitive advantage over other university-based incubators that were talking acceleration in business but not social entrepreneurship. And so I left that incubator in 2019 when my university president retired, and so I wanted the Polk Institute to be a positive coming out of COVID-19, and social entrepreneurship is something I 100% believe in. I would expect everyone to become a social entrepreneur, but I could see 60% of the Polk Institute clients becoming social entrepreneurs as well.
Gary, with you being a native of Los Angeles, could you tell us a little bit more about your backstory?
I'd love to. My family is from Texas. My parents moved here after my dad got out of World War II in the late 40s. So I have roots in Texas. I love Texas. But I grew up in the South Bay part of Los Angeles, product of the LA Unified School District. Went to Gardena High School. 2 years to Azusa Pacific, got my BA at Loyola Marymount. Came out, went into banking. An amazing 10-year ride in B of A. Didn't realize how much I learned until after I left banking and was able to apply all these business principles at that point. So two things I learned in banking. One, character. I was a loan officer, and they taught me the five C's of credit, and the number one C being character. And then B of A was into relationships, long-term relationships. So we had a client 5, 10 years. We would do all kinds of things to keep their business versus someone walking off the street looking for some quick deal or some kind of promotion. So that is my background. I got my master's at Cal State Dominguez Hills while I was on the way up the corporate ladder at B of A. My last assignment at B of A was Beverly Hills. I worked in Beverly Hills, Maine for 2 years, and I started looking at the financial statements of my clients, and I realized that average people who live in Beverly Hills, not the entertainers and the doctors and the athletes, were entrepreneurs. And I realized I need to get out of corporate America and go out and pursue something else. But then all of a sudden in 1991, I got a chance to teach at Cal State Northridge at the college level. Prior to that, never dreamed of teaching. But within 3 years, I realized that was my passion. So 91 to 2021, I've been teaching 30 years now, and I love it. And so I'm on summer hiatus from classes, but now it gives me a chance to focus on my private clients and the Polk Institute. So every morning I'm waking up full of energy. I'm 65, and I can't wait until morning comes.
Gary, as we wrap up, how can listeners learn more and contact you?
Well, my email address is gpolk@polk-ise.com. Our website is polk-ise.org. So they can contact me at either one of those. I'm a teaching professor at Cal State Dominguez Hills. So gpolk is csudh.edu is another way. But I also serve with the Small Business Development Center over in called Pacific Coast Regional. So we're an arm of the SBA. So I'm a business advisor to existing businesses through the SBA. So I'm a busy guy, but it all comes back to entrepreneurship and small business. So that's how they contact me. And I love what I do, and I'm in love with the idea of learning from people that I work with, as well as teaching people from a practitioner standpoint. So to sum me up, Gandhi said, live as if you're going to die tomorrow and learn if you're going to live forever. And that's who Gary Polk is. And I'm trying to teach as many people as possible about the virtues of social entrepreneurship and small business.
I'm with you, Gary. And thank you so much for being with me today and sharing aspects of social entrepreneurship, your books, the Polk Institute. We wish you the best with your pursuits.
Great. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer, who, by the way, has a milestone birthday coming up. So happy birthday, Mark. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to The Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclip.io and check on the financial box for more information on The Anderson Files.